From the Public Affairs Staff of the Columbus Dispatch, this is Buckeye Forum.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Buckeye Forum podcast, where we talk about all of the happenings in state government, politics, and what's going on in the Ohio State House. The last time we did this, everyone was working in their offices every day like normal. Children were going to school. Sports were being played in front of crowds. But then a global pandemic happened. And since then, we've seen just a few things happen in state government. Ohio delayed its primary election from March 17th to April 28th at the last possible moment and conducted the primary almost entirely by mail. Governor Mike DeWine shut down most of the state to prevent the spread of COVID-19. And the Ohio General Assembly has continued doing what the Ohio General Assembly does with their ongoing fight between the two Republican-controlled chambers. So to talk about the latest developments and all of that, I have with me Randy Ludlow, a longtime Capitol reporter who now tails the governor for the Dispatch, and Anna Staver, who spends her days running between the two legislative chambers. I'm Rick Ruan, politics reporter for the Dispatch. Just to let you know, we're recording remotely today, and that's a first, as far as I know, in Buckeye Forum history. Welcome, Anna and Randy. So why don't we start off with Randy? Can you explain kind of the latest developments around the Ohio Department of Health Director who oversaw a lot of the closing of the state?
Well, thank you, Rick, but be remiss at the top to not acknowledge Jim Siegel, who voiced the introduction to Buckeye Forum. Jim died a year ago Thursday. We miss him still. We think of Stacy and his sons, Ben and Vince. We wish them well, and hundreds joined us this week in doing likewise. Atkins' resignation was quite sudden and a surprise. She seemed to indicate that it extracted a personal toll in a period in which armed protesters appeared outside her home in Bexley. She was assigned State Highway Patrol security. It doubtless extracted a personal price well beyond the professional price. And one got a sense that she had burned out and understandably was worried about the toll it was taking on her family. Insofar on the professional side, insiders wonder if she had begun to lose a bit of DeWine's ear, if perhaps he pushed more aggressively to reopen. Amid protests from both fellow Republicans and business interests, as he and Lieutenant Governor John Husted increasingly relied on panels from affected industry segments on recommendations on when and how to reopen. Again, that's not anything DeWine or Acton themselves likely would ever confirm, but that was in the mix as Dr. Acton decided to step aside and instead become a senior health advisor to the governor.
Anna, some of that pressure had been building from within the Ohio General Assembly, correct? What can you tell us about what some of the state lawmakers from DeWine's own party were saying about Acton and about these orders that closed down the state for months?
Well, there's been quite a push by certain Republicans, the more conservative members of the party, to sort of strip Governor DeWine and Dr. Acton of some of their powers or all of their powers. It really depends. Probably the most, the bill that went the furthest was one introduced by a representative named John Becker from the Cincinnati area. It would have made all pandemic-related public health orders, even the ones currently in place, advisory, until the entire state legislature came back and approved them. So when, you know, they went to close the state or even when they went to shut polling places, that couldn't have happened unless they got everybody back to Columbus to take a vote. Most Republicans said, you know, I think that's too far. So House Speaker Larry Householder, we talked about in the intro, got behind a bill that would have made them all 2 weeks, and then they'd have to get legislative approval within those 2 weeks if they wanted an extension.
And that is just the actual kind of legislative efforts that they undertook. There were also attacks on a more personal level of Acton from members of the General Assembly. There was Of course, Andrew Brenner, who compared the shutdown of Ohio to Nazi Germany, which rang with some anti-Semitism to some people, as Dr. Acton is Jewish. You had John Cross calling for her resignation directly. So, you know, you were seeing an effort to go through their, you know, sort of legislative channels to be able to limit Dr. Acton's power. But there was also that sort of external pressure to get her out of that job from some members of the legislature.
Oh, yeah, for sure. When she announced her resignation, Representative Mino Batali, who's been pretty vocal throughout this process. People may know him. He's the one who said that he doesn't wear a mask because his face was created by God. He said not good enough that she was gone, and he talked about also getting rid of DeWine and Husted. So he's been a pretty outspoken critic throughout this.
Now, on the other side of things, Acton has become somewhat of a hero for Democrats in the legislature, and we know that she has kind of a huge fan base around the state. I know that a Facebook group, fan group, has thousands of members. Randy, what was the kind of rise of Acton like, kind of watching it from the front lines, covering the governor's office, seeing somebody who was kind of a virtual unknown gain such a high profile so quickly?
Well, Dr. Acton certainly came, for want of a better word, out of nowhere. She quickly gained admirers and fans, including DeWine, for her approach. It was based in science, in a medical evidence, rather than in politics and economical considerations. She attracted glowing articles from the likes of the New York Times and the Washington Post. And she did gain quite a following for being a strong woman and a strident voice in this epidemic, but still could relate in a personal, emotional way to the pain Ohioans were suffering. Even economically, around 1.3 million Ohioans lost their jobs in this epidemic. It's going to require massive budget cuts or the near draining of the $2.7 billion rainy day fund to account for this for the next fiscal year. So, but again, the political considerations, the increasing pressure from a Republican legislature, who most of whom declined to even wear a mask, it began to weigh, and certainly Governor DeWine has a stake to the extent he can in trying to maintain cordial relationships with lawmakers. And again, as noted, some critics think he began to bow to the pressures from industry and Republican lawmakers to open. Now, that said, in the interest of fairness, coronavirus cases on a daily basis average have declined by 1/3 since Ohio began to reopen its economy. Will that go up? I don't know. But you look at the national maps displayed every night. It shows Ohio steady or declining as compared to many states where it's going up. Now, has Ohio gotten lucky, or is Ohio actually taking virus precautions? You can judge by yourself when you go out by the number of people you see wearing masks. At least anecdotal evidence on my part suggests most people are not wearing masks. Will we pay a price for that with a spike in infections in coming weeks? We shall see.
If you really want to gauge the fame that Dr. Acton has gained over the last 3 months or so, you only need to know that she's supposed to appear on Sesame Street sometime in the near future here. So that kind of says it all. So where do we go from here now that Dr. Acton has resigned? Randy, I can't remember if you've said this already, but she's supposed to stay on as a health advisor to Governor DeWine. We've heard about a second wave of COVID cases coming. Who's going to be in charge of the health department? Who's going to be making these kinds of decisions that Dr. Acton was previously a part of if we're dealing with a second wave of this?
Well, Dr. Acton remains a senior health advisor to Governor DeWine. as part of this process, which he bills as giving her more free time to spend with her family. I know when they said they were reopening restaurants, I was asked if she planned to go out to a restaurant with her husband. And she said, I don't have a life. So it has extracted a personal price on her and her family. Lance Himes, who's chief counsel, the Ohio Department of Health, and chief of staff, is the interim health director. He held the same position for 2 years under the last couple of years of the John Kasich administration. So certainly he's not unfamiliar to that job, but he is not a medical professional, which neither of Kasich's health directors were. The interim medical director, who has replaced Dr. Mark Hurst, who is suddenly retired and is widely respected, has been at the Department of Health since 2017, 14 years in emergency medicine. So again, not a rookie. We will just have to see where it goes from here. Most of reopening decisions are done. Mass gatherings remains to do with stadiums, arenas, concert halls, and how we handle those, and Ohio State sports, professional and amateur sports going forward. That remains to be worked out.
Anna, what do you expect to happen with some of the limits on executive power that the legislature was or has been considering now that Dr. Acton has resigned? Is that the sort of thing that you could see placating the legislators who wanted to see that? Or do you expect those things to hang around and for the General Assembly to actually need to deal with this legislatively?
I expect them to hang around, but I'm not convinced that they're ever going to make it into law, mostly because unless something changes with the governor, he's been pretty explicit that he would veto these, that he does not think this is the correct way. And Senate President Larry Obhoff hasn't gone that far. He hasn't said that. He believes that there's a time and a place to review all of this and decide whether we need to make changes to executive power. But in the middle of a pandemic is not the time, seems to be his position. And so with some hesitancy in the Senate and, you know, opposition just flat out from the governor's office, I don't see how the House Republicans get this passed. Maybe Randy knows something that I don't, but as far as I know, the governor's still pretty opposed to this kind of idea.
Governor DeWine has expressed no interest in backing off his prior stance that even his Republican colleagues are after a power grab away from the executive that would diminish public health powers. He's been pretty strident on that. So he would veto anything like that that gets to his desk. Whether they have a veto-proof majority remains iffy.
So, Anna, absent, you know, getting to curb executive power, what did the legislature kind of finish up before they recessed for the summer? And what is still left to accomplish this year?
Well, it's so funny. I was looking back at this article that I wrote in January after they were coming back from the holidays and New Year's about all the things they wanted to get done. And I'm like, yeah, none of that happened. We all kind of got sidetracked by the pandemic. So they did a lot of coronavirus-related legislation. Some of it was around education, sort of increasing remote learning, relaxing teacher evaluations, relaxing student evaluations. Like, specifically, if your kid doesn't pass the third grade reading test in the fall, that's not a reason alone to hold them back anymore, at least for next year. And so a lot of that stuff is just things that needed to happen. They sent a lot of federal money for coronavirus out to local governments. And so all the things you'd sort of expect. There was some contention about contact tracing, and they couldn't come to an agreement on that. So that didn't happen. Some Republicans wanted written consent on file of people agreeing to be traced. But some of their colleagues, Republican colleagues who are medical professionals, was like, that's not practical. Maybe we could do like a voice recorded consent, you know, because a lot of contact tracing, I guess, is done over the phone where you're calling everybody that, you know, if you're sick, you're calling everybody and they can just record that rather than having to like, you know, scan something and email it in and it just gets cumbersome. So that didn't go. Then they also didn't do anything on gun control after the Dayton shooting, I know the governor came out with this big, strong Ohio plan, and it just, I don't think it's had a hearing in like 5 or 6 months. It just sort of evaporated in the pandemic. Sports betting also kind of disappeared. Some criminal justice and sentencing reform bills disappeared. Now, I will say that the House and Senate separately are planning to tour the state and do this kind of listening tour to hear what people want on police reform. I'm not quite clear on how we do socially distant community meetings, but I think we're all going to find out. So that should be pretty interesting. I think there are some tentative police reform bills that started to drop in like the last couple of days. They're very, very new. None of them have had a hearing. But I think that should be really interesting this summer to kind of follow lawmakers around Ohio and like hear from people, like, what do we want to change? What should change?
So plenty more to talk about as we roll through this year. And we didn't even mention the fact that there's going to be an election that happens in November, and Ohio probably going to be a little bit of a factor in all of that.
Sometimes, I hate to say it, it's so indeed weird. Do you ever like just sometimes forget that we're having a presidential election? Because it like it feels like it should be a much bigger part of our national like narrative right now, but sometimes I almost forget it's happening.
Well, it'll be interesting this fall to see how the whole Trump dynamic plays out amid both criticism of his handling of the pandemic and his reaction to calls for reform in the wake of police brutality, George Floyd, systemic racism, which undeniably is present, which he refuses to acknowledge. So we'll see what comes down the road. Meanwhile, don't discount Dr. Acton as being out of business. She remains in the governor's ear. Whether she's gone from heroin to pariah to martyr remains to be seen. We'll see what happens down the road. We're certainly living amid interesting and somewhat dangerous times.
Well, luckily, we have a great team of reporters on our public affairs staff that is going to keep all of our readers and listeners informed of all of those developments. We're going to call it a wrap on this edition of Buckeye Forum. Thank you for listening, and please tune in to additional episodes. As Anna and Randy alluded to, there's lots of news happening in state government and politics over the next few months, and we're going to be reporting on all of it. You can listen to us here on the Buckeye Forum, but you can also read all of our stories at dispatch.com, or even better, get a print subscription to the Columbus Dispatch. We appreciate our paying customers very much. So thank you guys for listening, and thank you to Anna and Randy for joining me.
Thanks.
Thank you, Rick.